Commission work session. Today is Tuesday, May 14th, 2024. Time is 5:30. Could we have roll call, please, Jamie?
Yes, Mrs. Myers.
Yes.
Here.
Here.
Mrs. Williams.
Here.
Here. Could we stand for the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, that brings us to discussionary items. Superintendent Shaw.
So right now, Jackie and Andrew for our PBIS presentation are on their way here. So they'll be here shortly. We're going to jump down to the 24-25 ISD budget and ask for any questions you may have on that. Remember, I'll do the best of my ability of answering. Everything with the ISD this past year, it's been going very well. And if you were to, as I've had to say in the past, if the board elects to not approve the ISD budget, you have to give rationale for not approving it. All the school districts in the county are to either approve or not approve. They're showing in their general fund that, I'm trying to pull that up quickly here, that their revenues are $26.5 million. Their projected expenditures is 27.5, so they're going to spend approximately $1 million of their fund balance for general fund. And then in the special education fund, their projected revenues of $55 million, expenditures of almost $59 million, so they're going to spend about $4 million. In the area of special ed, we always see that their fund balance runs a little higher, and that has to do with the time of year that they make their payouts to all the locals, so that's why their fund balance has to run higher for special ed, because their payout to us is in September.
Yeah, we get one payment in September, and yep, then the remainder in December.
Yep.
And then if there's any, usually after the county settlement as well, sometimes we get a small adjustment. Yep.
So any questions or discussion on the ISD budget?
I think it's nice that we have made progress with the ISD.
Yes.
It's what it has been a few years ago.
Thank you. And so appreciate that on the ISD budget. So next up is a 612 Envision Math proposal. Where's he at? There he is. Sir, it is all yours.
All right. I won't be speaking very long. I'd like to turn things over to the folks that have put in all of the hard work and the hours into the presentation that they're going to bring you. I did want to point out that, not only do we look at what, National Math Consortium say with in regards to the curriculum that we're going to be presenting, is that in that it meets the national standards. The folks here have spent long hours in the afternoon, in the mornings, during the day, in department level meetings, doing their own digging into the data to make sure it's what's best for our students. So today, we've got Andrea here, our curriculum specialist, and we also have representation from all the building levels, 6 to 12, teachers and coaches, and an administrator. So we thank you all for being here, and we look forward to what you have to say.
Thanks. Sorry, I'm trying to connect here. It looks like I might be struggling to do so. Failed to connect.
If you need to, Andrea,
and see if I can reopen it.
Do you like the stick music playing in the background?
I would enjoy that.
Let's see. Oh, there we go. Business. Perfect. All right, well, thank you so much for allowing us the opportunity to come and talk with all of you this evening about our 612 math curriculum adoption. I have a wonderful group behind me, so I'm only going to talk briefly as well and give you a quick introduction into what this process looked like. And then members of this team are going to stand up and walk you through what this process looked like at each of their buildings at those levels. They have done some phenomenal work over the last year and have really poured their hearts and souls into the work and have spent a lot of time studying resources. So I hope you're really impressed with what you hear from them this evening. So as I said, I have members of the Monroe Public Schools 612 math departments here with us this evening, but those math departments include teachers, coaches, and administrators, and together those members collaborate, and they make those curricular decisions for continuous improvement both within their buildings and throughout our district. And over the past year, those departments engaged in a really thoughtful and rigorous process as they studied different curriculum programs. And tonight, just to lay out for you the way this presentation will go, we're going to share with you first our instructional vision of math in Monroe Public Schools, followed by what that process looked like for that curriculum review. And then at the end, we're going to be making a recommendation that you consider approving Envision Mathematics for our 612. One of the very first things that we do as a department is we look at these 8 standards for mathematical practice. These are national standards from the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics, or NCTM. So we always look for these 8 things to be present within any curriculum program that we're looking for. And then we think about, well, how strong are those things as we look at? We rate them. Are they highly present? Are they just there some of the time? Are they there rarely? And together we make those decisions whether or not those 8 standards are strong within that program. Within those math practices, we also use them to create our own vision of what math would look like in Monroe Public Schools. And so this is something you may remember. About a year ago, I stood here with the K-5 team. I think it was in May of last year that we stood here and made the recommendation for Envision Math. And this was something that we relied heavily on as we thought about what we wanted a student who travels through Monroe Public Schools and experiences math in each of our buildings. What kind of skills did we want them to have, and what kind of thinkers did we want them to be as they left? And we aligned these things with those 8 standards that you just saw. So again, as we looked at these programs for 612, we thought, well, as a student moves from 6th grade all the way through to our middle school and then to our high school, what do we want that student to embody as those characteristics? And again, these align nicely with those standards for math practice. And finally, the other document that we relied heavily on as we evaluated resources is our vision of high-quality instruction in math. And this is a tool that each of our schools use across the district as we go through different classrooms and we're visiting. We're looking for these elements of high-quality instruction and higher-order thinking, depth of knowledge, connectedness to the world. And you'll see those titles in bold, and then underneath are indicators of those pieces. So as we looked at the different curriculum programs that you'll hear about in just a minute, we thought about, are those elements, those things that we hold tight to and we believe in Monroe Public Schools, how strong are those things within the programs? And again, this is just another continuation of our high-quality instruction document. All right. So as I said, this process begins with a lot of department work. So our math departments have been studying our math data over time in Monroe Public Schools. As you know, we've shared that data with you. That becomes public. And we have identified that need. We identified it in the K-5 last year and went through our process, and we identified in 612 that our trend in data is showing that we need to explore some new curriculum materials. So we have spent the last year investigating and studying multiple math programs. We have studied the alignment, as I said, to our vision of high-quality instruction and those 8 standards for mathematical practices. We've consulted with our Monroe County ISD. Kathy Berry has been just instrumental in this process in helping us to find those programs that are working in places and to think about how we can replicate that here in Monroe. We have engaged in professional development provided by specialists from these companies. Our departments, I said monthly department meetings, but these departments are meeting more than monthly. They are talking constantly, collaborating, and just digging in and doing some really great work. And through all of that, then that leads to that final selection of a program. So with that, I'm going to hand over to the high school now, who's going to start. We're kind of thought it might be nice to go in this reverse order. The high school was the first to look through materials, and Envision came out as a front runner for them. So we're going to have them step up and kind of talk about what their process has looked like over the past year.
Hi, my name is Eric Rausch. I'm a teacher at the high school. I'm the math department's teacher leader, or whatever they're calling that role now. I was asked to kind of talk about some of the history since I've been here for 24 years of our last four curriculum adoptions. When I got here in 2000, they were in year three of an attempt to try to have two different parallel tracks, one that was traditional algebra, geometry, algebra two, and then a second one, which was an older version of the curriculum that we have now. And it didn't work out quite like they had hoped. It ended up being tracking sort of unintentionally based on the way that students ended up getting scheduling by the time that I was there. And so what ended up happening was when we got to the next adoption in 2006, the issue was that we had the two of them, and it was almost like a competition fighting for students and things like that. So at that time, the traditional curriculum seemed to be working better. And we adopted a complete algebra, geometry, algebra two for all students so that they're all mixed in and we didn't have any tracking left. So by the 2015 time when we looked, Common Core was on the way. We knew that the standards were about the same. Michigan was kind of ahead of the game when it came to content. But those eight standards for mathematical practice was the one spot where things were lacking in what we had been doing, and anticipating those changes, the conversation went to going back to the integrated curriculum that we had done before, because it gave students a chance to talk to each other and to do those things that you saw in those eight standards. But what we have found over the last several years is that teachers are having to find their own opportunities for skill work. The book is very great at concept, but a lot of teachers supplement with a lot of the individual practice. And so essentially what's happened is the department has continued, like so many things, this pendulum swinging back and forth, where we were very traditional, then very integrated. And so we finally started looking at resources, and Envision was by far the best one in terms of balancing those two things. It also presents them in the order that most research says that it should happen. So all of that concept work is at the beginning. They start the lesson with that, and their homework assignment, the problems where they have to apply something are first. And then they get the individual skill work later, because research shows that if you do it in that order, you keep both. But if you start with the skills and then do the concept just never transfers the way that it is. So we're very excited about the idea of being able to do the best of both worlds for the first time in my 24 years. And also add, even though it's not on my slide, that once we got excited about Envision and started talking about being our front runner, we later found out that that's what the elementary did. We didn't know that at the time. So the thought of doing it K-12 also we thought was a nice thing to think about. Now, if that's the direction that we end up going, we can't phase or we can't adopt all three courses at the same time. Because in an integrated curriculum, what happens is in our Math 1 class, they're doing a little bit of Algebra 1, a little bit of Geometry, and a little bit of Algebra 2. Then in a Math 2 class, they do a little bit of Algebra 1, a little bit of Geometry, a little bit of Algebra 2. And we actually tried to phase in 2 years' worth when we went back to this integrated program, and it didn't go well. So essentially what happened would be one at a time. So students currently in Math 1 would need 2 more years to finish out the state curriculum. Students currently in Math 2 would need to finish out Math 3. Otherwise, some topics would be repeated and others they'd never see. That's different for Math 4. That can become AP Pre-Calculus next year because it's already a pre-calculus class. And it's about 75%, the exact same as the standards that they have in that AP Pre-Calculus class. So that one is something that would be ready for next year, but everything else would need to be phased in. And in this slide, it kind of talks about what that would look like. So in the next school year, K-8 would already be ready to go with Envision Mathematics, but we'd only could do Algebra 1, replacing Math 1, so that those students in Math 2 and Math 3 can finish out the state curriculum in those classes. And then in the next year, we'll have geometry ready. That would replace Math 2 for those students that had previously taken Algebra 1, but we still have Math 3 in place for students still finishing out the old curriculum, so that by 26-27, that's when we would have full implementation at the high school of all of those classes. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Jeff McVay.
So my name is Jeff McVay. I'm one of the school improvement coaches at the high school. So when we started thinking about this opportunity to adopt a new curriculum resource, some of the areas that we thought would be helpful to grow in is not only math, but all the content areas at the high school was really focused around helping students to become college and career ready. That's our ultimate goal at the high school. So when we started looking at the different options, we wanted to select the best resource that would help students progress towards their post-secondary goals. And we think that Envision does a nice job of pushing students. So our really high-achieving students that are looking at really competitive four-year universities. There's lots of resources here to push those students to that high level of rigor that they need to be successful on those college entrance exams like the SAT. What our teachers also like is there are resources to help students who have historically struggled with math. You know, so we know that having a strong foundation in math only opens up doors for you. So even our students who may not go into a profession that really is demanding in the area of mathematics, we still want to have those opportunities available to them. And we really liked how this resource does a nice job of providing that high rigor, but then also resources to help struggling students. So in terms of like a resource for teachers to work with, Eric talked a little bit about this idea of balancing skill work and practice with real world problem solving kind of experiences. So each lesson in the Envision resource is split up into four parts. And the third part is really where kids start get into that problem solving and practicing part. And like Eric mentioned, that first question set that they'll see in step three is about, do you understand? Are you understanding the concepts that are being presented? And those question sets are really tied closely to those mathematical practices. So you see a direct alignment in the teacher resources there that's connecting to those mathematical practices. Then the question sets start to get into that skill building, procedural fluency with a high level of scaffolding. And as students move through those question sets, some of the scaffolds are removed and the problems become more challenging, and then we end up in some application problems, and then there's also some assessment kind of problems at the end that are designed to look like an SAT style question. So lots of supports there for practice and skill building, but still some application for real world kinds of questions. So I think throughout the presentation tonight, you'll probably hear a couple people mention vocabulary. So in the teacher resource, at the very start of that, there is vocabulary for that topic, review vocabulary, and then also vocabulary activities that the teachers can use to facilitate that vocabulary development and working knowledge of those words. So really a nice piece there. The grade level expectations are very clearly outlined in the teacher's guide. And also what to do if a student may be struggling to meet that grade level expectation. So they phrase it in terms of extending student thinking, so your students who are getting it, what to do when they're really on top of things, what to do next, and then also what to do for students who are struggling. And sometimes it's as granular as, like, if a student is struggling with number three, look back at X, Y, or Z to help support that student. And each of the lessons is really broken up, most of them is broken up into kind of 2 days, where the first day is kind of like this introduction, we're going to learn about it, and then the second day is where we start to get into more of the practice, and then teachers can be pulling small groups and helping support whatever kids may need. We also noticed that with the Envision resources, there is a really strong connection between the online stuff and the paper stuff. So when you start looking at these different resources from all the different companies, they'll come in and do a presentation for you and tell you all about it. But it's really clear when there's not an alignment between the online resources and the paper pencil stuff. It feels like some of the online stuff is just like an add-on that was attached to it without a lot of thought. The Envision resources are really connected in terms of the teacher resources, but also stuff that students would use for assignments or assessments or presentations and stuff like that. And then our teachers have also mentioned that most other schools are on this algebra, geometry, algebra 2 pathway. So if we have a student who moves into the district, that's kind of the path that they're moving to us with. So having them join our district a little more seamlessly would be helpful if we were also on that pathway. And then when we started to try out some of these resources in the classroom, we were looking at kind of three things. So context for mathematical concepts where students are learning about. There's in each of the topics, so a topic is like a chapter. About halfway through the topic is a three-act math question, and you devote a day to those three-act math questions. And it's kind of a series of open-ended videos. And I was surprised how engaging the videos are. They're really interesting. The kids seem to respond well to them. And it's an open-ended question or situation that students are supposed to think about, along with kind of like a teacher's facilitation guide. So the teacher is kind of facilitating the kids thinking about this situation and not really necessarily presenting the situation. The videos are kind of presenting the situation. And there's a series of the videos. So after each of them, the students are oftentimes asked to like hypothesize about the outcome or the situation or the answer to the problem. And then the next series may shift the problem or the situation a little bit, and students have to kind of revise their thinking. And then they're working towards a solution, and the final video kind of reveals the solution. But that was one of the pieces that the teachers liked, and the students responded well to as well. We also were thinking about supporting classroom discourse around the mathematical practices. So at the start of each lesson, there's a kind of a warm-up question set that is closely connected to those mathematical practices. And with that question set, there's also a mini facilitator's guide that talks about what you would do before, during, and after students are working on that question set. And there's questions for the teachers to use as prompts to promote students' thinking and sharing about those mathematical concepts. And then also like some guidance as to what you might want to consider doing as a whole group, small group, or individually. So really helpful there, and like a really robust, like kind of warm-up activity that seems like it would be really helpful. And then also again, just thinking more about those mathematical practices. As I mentioned before, that first kind of question set, that do you understand, those questions really have a strong connection to those mathematical practices, taking the concepts from that lesson in presenting questions that are connected to a mathematical practice. So a nice piece there. And I'm not going to read all this, I don't think. This is just teacher feedback, but when you read it, you know, the teachers are reporting that students are engaged in the activities, that the resources are helpful for them for understanding the math. I'll just give you guys a second. You can read through that stuff. Okay. All right.
Okay. So our data for grade 6 through 8 start back at 2013. So in 2013, MPS started using Connected Math 3 for grades 6 through 8, and that's still some of the curriculum that's being used today. Some of our 6th grade teachers are still using CMP 3. So then we started to notice that our 6th, 7th, and 8th grade data, the MSTEP and the PSAT, started to look like a flat line. There wasn't a lot of growth. We saw some peaks and we saw some valleys. So given what we were seeing, we decided that it was time to start thinking over CMP3. It wasn't really meeting the needs of all of our students. So acknowledging that there has been a little bit of a steady decline or a stagnant growth in our student data, MPS teachers in grades 6 through 8 started to pilot two different programs, CMP4, which was the updated version of CMP3, as well as the curriculum that K-5 had already adopted, Envision Math. So if you start to look at, this is our sixth grade MSTEP data from 2014 to 2023. Even at our highest in 2015 and 2016, we were at less than 30% proficient. We saw a little bit of an uptick last year for 22-23, but that still left us below the 15% proficiency mark. Seventh grade, our greatest year that we saw here since 2014 was 2016 and 2017, and that was just hovering above the 30% mark. Again, a little bit of an uptick for 22-23, and still sat us in the 20% region. And then this is our eighth grade, 2014 to 2023. If you notice, right at about 2017, 2018, to the left, those scores are for MSTEP, and then the scores on the right are for PSAT. And while 2021 looks like a pretty great uptick, that was the year that all state testing was optional, and we had very few reports. So as for these scores, and just kind of, like we said, seeing that steady decline or kind of flatline, we decided to look into something else.
So after we, after we went ahead with those pilot opportunities for the students and the teachers, we surveyed both the students and the teachers. And these are just a few of the things that were reported by the teachers. The CMP4 required more outside resources to support students who were economically disadvantaged and or had different learning needs than the majority of their peers. On the flip side of that, the teachers reported that Envision provided those resources for all learners, not just the learners who were struggling, but also for the learners who were excelling and needed that extra push. So the teachers across the board felt like Envision provided all of those things within their program and didn't require any outside digging, I guess, for extra supports. They felt that Envision is a more rigorous program and that it's aligned to each of the NCTM mathematical standards that Jeff mentioned with the high school as well.
So some teacher feedback. This person actually is mine. By the way, my name is Ashley Cornett, sixth grade teacher, Arbor Road Elementary. I found that my students' engagement is up from CMP4, which we tried earlier this year. The students absolutely love having their own workbook, and they take such good care of it. It's literally like they're little babies. My students love the repetition, and they often comment on how they feel that they fully understand a concept where in the past they would struggle. And they also told me that they felt more confident and prepared for the MSTEP this year. And then one of my colleagues also said that students frequently pull me aside to show me the vocabulary in iReady because it matches our instruction.
Hi. Hello, I'm Gary Davis. I teach 8th grade math at the middle school. And we did a pilot back in February, but we have chosen, me and Justin Simmons, he's another 8th grade math teacher, have chosen to continue to do the next topic in the Envision curriculum. Right now, we are doing a very algebra-heavy topic, which is what they're called for the unit that they're working on. And the topic has a lot of vocabulary with it. And I found that the vocabulary limit, I know it's been mentioned over and over again, but it's making, not only is it better for the students, but it's also helping explain the curriculum a little bit better. So we're using words that I never thought we'd be using regularly, like coefficient, and now variables we use all the time, but to explain coefficient, the book just uses it, and then we just start using it more and more. So the vocabulary element has been a very big thing that I've tried to integrate more and more into the curriculum, and I didn't really have to, it just is there. And the book does a really good job. We did a geometry lesson before this. That was our pilot. And a lot of the elements from previous lessons and units that we did not teach are integrated automatically into that lesson. So even though we're not talking about algebra anymore, there are parts of algebra integrated into it. So it does a really good job of continuing what you've learned in a previous unit into the next unit. So between that and the vocabulary, it's been a very big, I think it's been very beneficial to the students that I've been working with. Thank you.
And I'm Cheryl Hoffman, district math coach. I get to present the slide that represents why we are all here. It's the student feedback, so you can read through what they're saying. But I have to tell you, in this new position that I have, I've been going into classrooms and I've been modeling lessons with the kids, and I've got pictures in my office of I love math, thank you so much. You walk around, the kids are so positive about this math program. So you can see that they say things like, I can do the math, I learned to solve word problems. Their feedback mimics the teacher's feedback. So they're excited, and it's a lot of fun.
So as you can see, and as you've heard, there's a lot of work that's gone into each level, and we've considered not only just what the actual print materials look like, but what do they look like in action? What do the teachers feel like as they come in and they start to teach? How accessible is this program for our teachers? And then also what supports are present for the teachers as they're teaching, both in the print, and I can't say enough about how we've had such support from the company themselves. Their consultants have been phenomenal with working with our teams and helping us to just plan and think through what this could look like in our district. So as we've talked about, this would be a K-12 alignment. Given your approval, we would have K-12 alignment in our district, which is the first time in, I'm not sure if we have had it in a very, very long time.
At
if
least
we,
24 years.
We haven't had it. And we're excited for that, and we would be amongst one of possibly the only in the county that could offer that kind of support for our kids. So we feel like that's a really strong point for Mineral Public Schools. We feel like this is going to provide a rigorous student experience across all grade levels. That curriculum just naturally spirals into the next grade. So as we have students experiencing one thing, it's going to continue to carry over. And we're excited a couple years down the road for what, you know, as kids leave elementary and they go into middle school and then they leave middle school and they go to the high school, like, what are these folks going to see as these kids come into their classrooms and they've experienced the same predictable math routine and alignment over those years? So we feel like that's going to create a really rigorous student experience. And it's also going to open up some really great K-12 conversations amongst our teachers. We have something common that we can sit down together, K-12, and really look at and understand where a student's coming from and understand where they're going. We also are going to be providing teachers with access to resources from all grade levels. So the great thing about Envision is once you have a teacher license, you have access to any of those programs that your district has purchased. So as a middle school teacher, I can have access to an elementary program, I can have access to a high school program. So I can continue to look at how what I'm teaching aligns with what they've learned and with where they're going. Our trainers, as I mentioned before, are extremely knowledgeable in that K-12 progression and in the way that they present to us. They've made some great connections with the teams that they've been working with already. The progress that our teams have made so far, for Algebra 1, our high school team has already begun looking at their ECOs, or their essential course outcomes, and their pacings for semesters 1 and semester 2. They've already designed some assessments for semester 1, and they've created some beautiful curriculum maps for all of their topics, and they are working on organizing their resources at that lesson level. And the same can be said for the AP pre-calculus, those ECOs and the pacing for semesters 1 and 2. They've prepared their documents, and they're ready to submit those to the College Board for approval for AP pre-calc, and they're working on organizing some resources again at the lesson level. So our immediate next steps would be that continuing preparation over the summer to provide our teachers with some professional development and continue to work within our departments to lead that work. At the high school level, we want to continue to prepare for Algebra 1 over the summer and begin working on geometry during the next school year. There's an AP Pre-Calculus Summer Institute we'd like to have people attend. We'd like to prepare required documents for AP Pre-Calculus. Again, submit those to the College Board for approval. And then for grades 6 through 8, we will offer some ongoing professional development with our established Envision rep, as well as all of our coaches. We have our 2 district math coaches and our school improvement coaches within the buildings that will continue to provide that instructional support. So that is what we have for you this evening. We can't thank you guys enough for listening to us. We know we took up a good chunk of time this evening, but this was really important work, and it's work that we're excited about, and we hope that you're excited about as well. So we hope that our next steps will also include an approval from the board to move forward.
So first and foremost, thank you. Great work. I know, Eric, I really appreciate the 24-year history and that path right there. And I know it was a hard, heavy lift when we think over the last 2 years in this area right here. And it's extremely exciting to think in terms of a K-12 system, that for our math to be in one complete set, and so that our coaches and our teachers, when they move about grade levels, it's basically seamless. And so I appreciate that work and the coming together at the middle school and at the high school levels. And so with that, to our board members, are there any questions?
I will not disappoint you, Andrea. I will not disappoint you. So just a few questions. I'm going to work backwards from 6th to 8th grade. I had the opportunity of looking at the program. We're allowed to pick up the materials and go through them. So I did my diligence, not as long and as in-depth as you did. And it afforded me the luxury to listening to what you said and recognizing within the material stuff that you talked about. So that was really beneficial for me in just listening back to you. So I was able to picture some things. One of the things I think that doesn't it use like characters like the robot and stuff like that to get kids engaged? And it's
they do have opening videos that have the characters, and some are like
I only remember like the robot.
Some of the girls,
he's like, come here. Like
right.
Yeah. The kids laugh.
I just thought of that, and I was like, I remember the robot, but I don't remember the other ones. You talked about extra resources online, and I think you brought that up 6th to 8th grade, and I think a couple of you brought those resources up online. And actually, that was part of what was within the materials, and it talked about some of those resources. And one, and I'm asking it because I've seen it before, is it called the Nerd Tutorial? Is that what it's called? And I thought it was interesting because I used the Nerd Tutorial, and that was referenced within the Envision Guide as a tutorial option.
I'm sorry, I post it on my Google Classroom. I post those videos in case a kid misses my class, so they have access to it. So if they don't hear my instruction, they can watch it at home. And also I post all my material that I use online, so they can actually access their classroom work if they're not in my class.
Right.
A lot of them have used that video when they're sick to try to keep up with what's going on in class as well.
Right. I just noticed it in the materials and used it myself, so that's why I thought that was interesting. There was a mention of I can't get to them all. Let me see. One of the big components that brought up was vocabulary. And when I went through the materials, like vocabulary, you're right. It's like everywhere, and there's definitions everywhere, and there's so many examples. I'm looking at it, and I'm like, it's almost like someone could pick up that book and just go through. Because the majority of it, and correct me if I misunderstood, is online, and it's presented online and then followed up with classroom interaction and instruction. I think it's very online heavy. Am I correct? Go ahead. Yeah, somebody.
High school, but I'll talk to that. So, because we've done a lot of work in it. You have the option. So before we dove in, we asked the specialist of the curriculum to come in and meet with us just so we could wrap our head around everything. They have just as much paper pencil as they do online. Like, everything's editable to us to download. So we talked as 9th grade teacher, high school teachers, the importance of being able to do both. So we've agreed to stay common in the fact that when we kick off a unit, there are slideshows to help us present it. But we've already, what we've been doing is editing. We haven't just taken their slideshow. We've put some things into it from other parts of their curriculum. We're allowed to edit it and made it. That's like the presentation when we first start. But we talked about the importance of a lot of the testing is online. Mm-hmm. So, but we also want, as a teacher, to be able to see their work, because mm-hmm. did they just guess right? Do you know what I'm saying? Or can we see actually where their thinking was at? Mm-hmm. So we agreed at the high school level, because things need to be consistent, that our tests are going to be paper pencil. But when we're doing quizzes without in practice work, then we can mix online and paper pencil, so they see both types of tests. So it is actually, you can do fully both. She said that some schools are full paper pencil, some schools are full online, and she thinks the best match is a mix of both, and that's what some schools do. So we kind of asked that, like, what are other districts who adopt this? And so it is, at the high school level, we're big paper pencil too mm-hmm. sometimes, so we're not ready to dive into full online, but we understand the importance of them needing to see the online mm-hmm. stuff also. So we think we've come up with a balanced mix of the two, but you could go either way.
Okay.
But even not for just for assessment, like if you look at any given lesson, like any particular chunk, like it's you have an option at each point. Do I want to do this online, or do I want to do this in groups, or do I want to do this with a whole class? Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that we liked, was you can get to know your group and know, okay, for this one, I think we need to do this one online, but this one, I absolutely need to make sure that I have them with me while we're talking about that.
And to follow up with what you were saying about how you could just pick up the book and start going through it, parents have not been so much of a fan of the most recent curriculum, because there's not a lot of examples. It's sort of a work your way through it, and then this will lead you to the next one. And parents really would like to see examples so they can figure it out and then help their children.
Some of the extra worksheets that they have with it too will actually have an instructional part mm-hmm. to it that explains step by step what to do in the math problem. So parents, if they're helping their children, and if children are struggling with it, it breaks it down. Step one, do this. Step two, do this. And then it gives them questions to do along with it. So there's a lot of what I like about this material a lot is that if you do send something home with the students, they can actually get help and support through those tutorials that come with some of the worksheets and stuff that you can send home. And that would be like a paper-based kind of homework.
And to your point, I know it's been a common theme about the years of experience of our teacher population here in Monroe. And that was one of the draws to Envision, because of how robust the resources are. That beginning level teacher can pick it up and be supported and learn from their peers and learn from their program, and really see how it's done. It is a very teacher-friendly program.
I would concur, going through the teacher's manual.
I learned a lot. I learned a lot of new words too. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to add too. I was just telling Beth that I just learned today after school. I would do a math intervention group, which they provide lots of intervention pieces as well, which is really great. But I learned from my students that they have a Snapchat math group where they send each other math problems that they're creating based on what we learned in class to keep pushing each other. And if somebody misses school, they teach them the math lesson over Snapchat. Like my kids, my sixth graders, are doing this. Like, that's
giving answers.
That's huge. They were not doing this back in November. So I think that I thought that that was really cool, like that they're taking charge in their own math learning and sharing it with each other. They were showing me Snapchats. I'm like, you guys are weird, but great. I love this.
It's great to see you all excited about the program, and it's great to see you excited about what you're doing. There's a lot of things that happen in the school district, and there's a lot of different visions, and there's a lot of ways on how to implement those visions. So sometimes if someone doesn't agree with someone else's way they put out that vision, doesn't mean they don't support you and they don't totally appreciate what you do.
I want to thank you all for coming in tonight, because I know this is a big chunk out of your evening. Thanks for coming in and presenting. It means a lot. Anyone else?
No. Wonderful. We appreciate, again, you guys coming in tonight. On the June 11th board meeting, you will see this up for approval. So thank you. You guys have
thank
a great
you
one.
All.
Thank you.
Take
thank
care. You. Great work, great work, great work.
Thank you.
And... Next up to bat is Jackie and Andrew, and we're going to be going over our Monroe Public Schools PBIS and data points that we were discussing around student behaviors this year. So as they fired up, I want to make sure to publicly, those that are right here, is just give these guys a big shout out for the work that they have done this year for us. They took on a role that when we began envisioning this just over a year ago, I don't think they really understood where they were, what we were going to be asking them to do. Because coupled with PBIS, we also brought in our peer-to-peer work with Dr. McElvoy and the rubrics. And so it's like, all right, we're going to need you guys to take the lead on this. And by the work that they did, they really made it so Monroe Public Schools, in all honesty, is probably 2 years ahead of where we could have ever been without their support, guidance, and leadership. So big thank you for that. And so with that, it's all yours. And the handouts is in your packet.
Thank you for the kind words, Andy. I'm Jackie Lenderman. I am the elementary PBIS coordinator.
I'm Andrew Hoppert. I'm the secondary Jackie.
So we have a quote that we wanted to share with you this evening. We feel this is a really beautiful quote, and we feel like it has really illuminated the work that the components that have really galvanized the work that we've done this year. So either we spend the time meeting students' emotional needs with love and teaching them empathy for those around them, or we spend time dealing with the behaviors caused from their unmet needs. Either way, we spend the time. So the work that we have done this year and that we look forward to continuing to do really helps give teachers back classroom time. You know, we hope to navigate behaviors with learning around empathy and love. And so with that, what we're going to share with you this evening is we've really taken our work and broken it down into four kind of components here. We're going to run you through what PBIS really is and what that is all about, and then some brief conversation around our peer-to-peer rubrics, Kickboard, and our kindness efforts, and just how that all has kind of come together to support the work that we've done. So I'll turn it over to Andrew.
So when we think about what PBIS is and how it guides our work, we think about PBIS as a framework for cultivating respectful, responsible students and a safe school community. So when we think about PBIS, we think about it in terms of components, and there are six components that we think through when we think through PBIS and teaching it and working through it. At a classroom level, a school-wide level, and a district level. The first component is that we work with schools to identify what their expectations are. And those expectations are commensurate to what the school's culture is and what the school needs. So identify those expectations, and that should be done with teaching staff, with social-emotional staff, with administrative staff, and with students. And the next component is to teach. Right? So we're teaching those expectations. We're teaching what students should be doing, those positive actions that help them be kind, that help them be safe, respectful, and responsible, or however a school would phrase that. The third component is monitoring those behaviors, so making sure that everyone who's working within the PBIS framework for schools is able to monitor what kids should be doing, can give pre-corrections, and give that positive feedback when necessary, or give those appropriate redirections when it's necessary. Component four, which has been a big source of growth in the district this year, is acknowledging and encouraging positive behaviors. When kids and students do positive things, we reward them. We acknowledge that. And we acknowledge that really, really carefully and really specifically, making sure that we're acknowledging the specifics of what they do so that reinforces that behavior. The nice thing about PBIS is it's not ignoring the fact that things don't go well. It does not ignore the fact that students don't always follow these expectations. So component five is creating a continuum of responses and consequences to problem behavior, including reteaching. So it's making sure that if students don't follow these expectations, how do we have a comprehensive set of norms to respond to that, including reteaching that positive behavior, using restorative approaches and making sure that we are always revisiting those expectations. And component six is using data to make decisions. Like, once again, for individual students, for classrooms, for schools, and district-wide. And Kickboard, which we'll go over, is going to be instrumental in moving forward and making really immediate decisions around that work and using that appropriate data there. So this is just a brief snapshot of a few things that we've thought through this year. We've been really careful to take staff climate data around around other feelings about PBIS. 83% of staff that responded to the third survey we had this year felt that their knowledge and comfortability around PBIS has grown this year. We gave a 5-point rating scale about how they see kindness as an awareness in our district, both in schools and in our community. And there's about a 4 median average or a median rating for how well staff feel like we're growing in that and how well they see that those things move. The two components that we talked about earlier, the two components that staff felt that they've seen the most growth in is acknowledging and encouraging those appropriate behaviors and defining those expectations. So making sure everyone's clear on those things and that we're showing students, you're doing a really good job with this. We've also gone to every building, and we're almost done with this work, and worked through with administrators on their effectiveness and how they feel that things are going in their buildings. And administrators are really happy with their work around establishing a commitment to PBIS, creating program stability and sustainability around PBIS, and how their staff is doing in monitoring those behavior expectations. So we think about the data. The actual numbers we're looking at. These numbers are staggering, and really, honestly, they make me happy to look at every time. Since this time last year, we've seen a 32.6% reduction in suspension periods. We've seen a 62.9% reduction in expulsions from this week last year.
So if you take a look up on the screen, you'll see a bar graph. We were able to pull suspension and expulsion data because as a district, we have been able to obviously collect that and track that through previous means. So you'll see the 22-23 and the 23-24 data up till now and what that looks like visually in regards to the drop in suspensions and the drop in expulsions. So we thought presenting that visually would be nice to see as well. When you look at the work that's been done so far with staff, we've got a timeline here that we've put together. Looking at the start of the year, back in August, the district offered EdFest. So Andrew and I presented a PBIS primer, and we also provided that information at our admin retreat as well, just kind of giving everybody a general overview of PBIS and what those components are and what they mean and how they support. And in November, we rolled out our rubric presentations, providing training for staff and students around the peer-to-peer rubrics. And then in November through December was kind of our Kickboard 101, right? So following those rubrics, we got Kickboard up and running, and we trained staff in the very first phase in the very basics of Kickboard. As we moved into December and January, we provided what we called Kickboard 102. And that was really a little bit more in-depth. That was training around referrals and data and things of that sort. Then looking into December through March, we kind of tried to continue that support by providing Monday paddles, which was just weekly updates and snippets, right? Like things that if you missed it in our training, you could go back and just hear it in a short snippet of information. We've also done PBIS office hours as well that we could hold for folks just if you had questions as you're using these resources and you're learning these tools, we wanted a place where staff knew they could come and get questions and share that out to other staff members. So, speaking of training and professional development, we have really, really...
Bus drivers are a good time.
We've loved our time working with our transportation department this year. They have undergone CPI initial and refresher training and participated in creating district-wide PBIS bus expectations and visuals for that, as well as creating a teaching video for students. We hope to see this become a series of videos. We want to continue that work and continue rolling those out so that learning stays fresh, those expectations stay fresh in their mind. But we would love to share with you the video that was built for our first go-round with it.
Welcome to the Monroe Public Schools PBIS Transportation Expectations video. First, a word from our Transportation Director, Ms. McDelvey.
everybody. My name is Ms. McKelvey. I am the transportation supervisor. And what you're going to hear soon is from my counterparts are going to show you the new PBIS transportation expectations. This is just make sure that you get to school safely, and that is their number one job and priority, so your health will go a long way.
There are three things we want to focus on for our bus ride expectations. Safety, responsible, and respectful. First, let's look at some tips for bus safety.
Welcome, my name is Cliff.
Hi, I'm Cheyenne.
And we are both drivers at Monroe Public Schools. We're here today to go over step one of bus safety. First, we'll start off with seating position. As you see, Cheyenne is sitting down with her pockets to the bottom of the seat and her back against the back. This should be the proper way to start. Secondly, we're going to go to hand positions, and keeping your hands to yourself is the most important thing to do. Keep them on your lap, keep them a shoulder apart. You can talk with your hands, but they must stay within your guidelines. This is the start of that. Third of all, we're going to look at how far to stand away for when you're waiting for a bus, which is 10 feet. If you are 10 steps away from a bus, you are far enough away where you can be seen by the driver, seen by other drivers and pedestrians, and you're safe. With that concluded is our ending of our first video on bus safety.
Next, let's look at some instructions on how to be responsible.
Hi, I'm Miss Bell. I'm a Monroe Public School bus driver, and this is Miss Rodden. She is a bus safety monitor for Monroe Public Schools. The first thing we're going to talk about is what your voice level should be on the bus. And it should be one seat in front of you, people should hear you, or one seat behind you.
It's safer to have a quieter voice, so if something happens, everybody can listen and know what's going on.
The second expectation is to be silent at the tracks. And Ms. Robin will show us what that looks like.
When we come up to a train tracks, we'll hold up the peace sign. That's for everybody so she can hear if anything's coming. And then once we cross the tracks, I'll bring my fingers down and then everybody can continue talking.
If she ever puts that up, that means that we need to be quiet. It might be an emergency, something that we need to let you know. The third thing is we're going to use the bus how it's intended. So it's intended to get you to school and back home safely. So Miss Robin's going to show us what it looks like to be paying attention when we're on the bus so that you don't miss your bus stop.
I'm going to look around as we're going through. I'm sitting straight in my seat, feet down, hands in my lap, and I see my blue house up ahead, and I'm going to sit there and be waiting for the bus to stop. Then I can get up and move off the bus.
The last thing we're going to talk about is how to safely enter and exit the bus.
Okay, getting off the bus, I will sit there and look and make sure I've not left anything on the seats or in the floor, and then I will move slowly through. I will have my hands on both rails to make sure that I'm safe coming down the steps. And then I will move 10 feet away to make sure that the bus driver can see me before she pulls off. And then to get back on the bus, I will go on and hold both rails as I go up. And then I will find my seat and I will sit down quietly and wait for her to move.
Lastly, let's look at an example of our last focus, being respectful.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Miss C. I'm going to be your bus driver for the school year. And before we go to school, I would like to go over my be respectful rules. Please use kind words. Please keep the bus clean. And please ask before you eat on the bus.
Hey, Miss C, do you mind if I eat my banana on the bus today? I promise I'll throw away my trash and you look beautiful.
Well, thank you, Annette. And yes, you can eat on the bus as long as you remember to throw it away before you get off the bus. I appreciate that you asked.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
A special thanks to all our transportation directors, bus drivers, and all of you who help make our bus rides a safe experience for everyone in the Monroe Public School District.
So, Mike Mead, who is an employee over at Arborwood South with me, he's phenomenal. He helped with all of the editing of that video. So we had a great vision, and he made it come to life. So
they were so much fun. That was such a fun time recording those videos. They're just so enthusiastic and so excited about everything. Yeah. So speaking of being enthusiastic and excited about everything, and we're going to see them tonight, we also had the absolute pleasure of working with our student board of delegates. So being able to bring students in a leadership capacity from every building and have them really think through some really hard things, some really consequential things, some district and community-wide events was a really, really powerful tool and a really, really powerful event for us. So we, our office focus this year was empathy and kindness. So we had the opportunity to have them engage in really deep conversation around what kindness means to them, what empathy means to them, and why it's important for us to show that in their buildings. And without them, the Great Kindness Challenge, which we'll talk about, and the walk a couple weeks ago would not have been possible. Their thoughts and their leadership and their drive to get things done was incredible. And it was really fun to watch students who were quiet and students who wouldn't speak a word or wouldn't engage, leading conversation by the end. Yeah. Really coming up with really strong and powerful thoughts was really, really cool. So
yeah.
We were able to work with them, and it was an absolute pleasure. So the second thing we're going to focus on was our first big project of the year was creating and implementing and teaching on the peer-to-peer rubrics. And we worked on really sweating the small stuff. Once we can hit things before they become big, then we're able to minimize recidivism and minimize when these things happen again and again. So when we think about the design of the peer-to-peer rubrics, it's designed to show students the specific consequences, of what happens based on frequency and severity. So as you look through the peer-to-peer mistreatment rubrics, this obviously all has to do with how students treat each other. At the top of the rubrics, it talks about low-level behaviors all the way down to higher-level behaviors, levels 0 through 4. These were designed with the code of conduct still very, very strong, empowering through all this work. Nothing was changed. This was just adapted for it to be easier to see. And going up to top down is the severity of those behaviors. And going from left to right was what happens when there's increased frequency. So if it happens once, these are the things that you can expect 2, 3, 4 times on and on and on.
Something else that was an important design of the rubrics was at the top, we indicate, as Andrew mentioned, the level 0 behaviors. Those are what we identified as classroom managed behaviors. This is important because, as many of us probably realize, when you have the chance to intervene on those low-level behaviors, those are many opportunities to build relationships with students, to build trust and rapport with students. And so being able to lend some clarity to that and to empower teachers to address those low-level behaviors was really important. So as you move down the rubric, there's the first 4 interventions. And those are always there for teachers just to help remind them that as you intervene in behaviors, these are the things that you want to do. And a lot of them are the things that we know, but to see them in print and to have them there as a reminder, it's really helpful. You know, it's really helpful in the moment. So it mentions the 15-second intervention. That was some of our work with Dr. McAvoy. Restating the definition of harmful behaviors, discuss and practice the alternative. Sometimes that is so much more powerful than we give it credit for. The restorative piece, apologizing and making it right, and remembering to try your best to praise in public and correct in private. So those pieces are incorporated into the rubrics as well. And so we have, if we have time, are we good on time?
You've got about till 10 of.
10 of. Let's
maybe
do
5.
One.
Okay.
It's all about a little break for people.
Okay,
sure.
Yeah, no problem. So we have a video both from students and a video from a teacher. So we'll...
from a teacher we've already seen this evening.
Yes.
She's all around, man.
She is wonderful. let's go ahead and we'll start with the students and kind of get an idea of what they're saying about rubrics and how they're feeling. So,
here you go.
Hi, my name is Jalen and I'm in 6th grade.
Hi, my name is Hayden and I'm in 5th grade.
Hi ladies, can you tell us a little bit about how the peer-to-peer mistreatment rubric is going in your classroom this year?
For
For my classroom, it is going quite well. I have seen kids like on the playground, if kids are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, they'll go up to each other and say, hey, that's on the rubric, you might not want to be doing that, and we'll like warn each other about the rubric.
Jalen, is the rubric posted in your classroom for students to refer to?
Yes, Ms. Mueller has even had us go over to like the rubric to see like where us ourselves would, if we do something wrong, would see where we would fall.
Awesome. And I'm wondering, do you see a difference in what's happening in your classroom or the school now that we have this rubric in place?
I do see a difference with kids, how they treat each other. They have definitely been more kinder and have been like aware of like how kids are acting and will help each other out along the way.
Awesome. Haven, now it's your turn. How is it going in your classroom with the rubric?
I think it's going really good. I see kids come up to each other sometimes when they're doing stuff that they're not supposed to, and they'll like peek over and whisper them like, you probably shouldn't be doing that before you get caught. And I think that's really good that they're still reminding them and telling them like, you shouldn't be doing that. And yeah.
And do you also have it posted in your classroom that students can refer to and talk about, you know, where they're at on the rubric?
Yes, we do. We have it on our wall, and we went over it when we first got it, and we went over like the different consequences of like how like it would affect us if we did do something that we did, like that we did do something.
Awesome. And do you guys feel like students are talking about just where they're at in the rubric based on each offense that they've had? And can anyone share a little bit about that?
Some people in my class have definitely, like, they'll do something, whether it be, like, on the bus or in the classroom or maybe even at home, like, on their device. They'll talk about it, and then they'll go over to the rubric, and they're like, hey, I might be falling under, like, this offense, like, whether it be 1 through 5. Mm-hmm. And then if they've done it multiple times, they'll say, oh, that's the consequence for that. And they'll just kind of... they'll be, like, aware about it.
Yeah.
Be more aware about it.
Awesome. So overall, how do we rate the rubric so far?
I think it's doing really good. It's helping a lot of... I'm pretty sure it's helping a lot of classrooms really, like know their consequences and know where they're going to fall through. And, yeah.
Awesome. JJ, what do you think?
I think it's going very well so far, and it has definitely helped kids be more aware about their actions towards other people.
Awesome. Thank you, ladies.
So we won't go into the video, but that was obviously a few of our Manor students, and we filmed a teacher from Aberwood South as you met her this evening, and something that she stated specifically was how she noticed a reduction in the need to actually bring students to the rubric and utilize it because she is seeing a reduction in the peer-to-peer behaviors. So that was really exciting to hear. She had some great things to say about it. So,
Hi.
There you go. So, when we think about the reduction in those behaviors, this is what Kickboard is going to help us to do. Kickboard is going to be a phenomenal, and is currently a phenomenal tool for us to be able to track behaviors and for us to make decisions around those behaviors. It's nice when you think about the through lines of this presentation that you can think about what component does this hit? Does this hit? So like the peer-to-peer mistreatment rubrics is our continuum of responses. How do we reteach kids? How do students and staff come together around what happens? Kickboard allows us to positively acknowledge behaviors and to use the data to make these decisions. So Kickboard is a district-wide tool for us to monitor and track student behavior. The stat we're going to come up with here in just a second is the grounding work is positive acknowledgments. So there is a series of positive behaviors that teachers or any staff member who has access to Kickboard can reward students for and acknowledge students for. And students can monitor their own progress on their Clever accounts and be able to track those things. We can also track aversive behaviors, and that's tracked through every staff member that has access to that child, and we'll go over that in a little bit, but they can track peer-to-peer mistreatment behaviors as well as minor and major behaviors. There's a streamlined referral submission process, so teachers or support staff can submit a referral, and administrators, when they handle that behavior or they work through that behavior, it automatically closes that feedback loop. So teachers or support staff are no longer guessing or no longer waiting for that reply or what's that email, they're getting that. And Kickboard also allows us to extrapolate data very quickly and very effectively, which is incredible. It's so much fun for data nerds. So if you like data, we'll talk. It's so much fun. So the behavior input dashboard is really, really simple. Teachers can use it on their phone or their district-issued device, and it's very, very quick and easy to be able to submit behaviors, both positive and negative, as well as neutral behaviors. So what interventions are we keeping track of as far as student behaviors? The referral dashboard is nicely organized for staff who are monitoring those referrals, and you can have good conversation with staff who are submitting behaviors and submitting referrals around why I made this decision the way I did, or if I'm rejecting this referral for whatever reason, I can tell you why. So that feedback loop is constantly, is continually closed, which is fantastic. And then at the bottom right there, it shows a student's timeline. So when any staff member that's engaged with a child submits a behavior, all the other staff members who have access to that child can see that. So if I send my kids off to music and Ms. Vincent says that Sirius had a really difficult day or a really good day, when they come back to my class, I know about that. It's on their timeline, so I can watch and keep track of those things as we move forward. So it helps build intrinsic communication without much effort, which is great. And then you can pull analysis for groups, individual students, or whole school, and soon all whole district data in a snap of fingers, which is really, really exciting. So Kickboard is going to bring us to a whole new level of being able to use data to make decisions not only school-wide, but district-wide, and it's extremely exciting. As of this morning, 319,180 positive, respectful, responsible, or safe behaviors have been tracked by teachers. And students see it and know it, and they feel that there's a procedure for when they're given these points or when they're given these acknowledgments that they're told, you're doing a really good job. We're really proud of you. These are the reasons you're doing wonderful things. So being able to celebrate this data, being able to celebrate this class-wide, school-wide, district-wide, it's incredible. And watching this and being able to like talk to students about how's your Kickboard looking, they're really excited about it. It's been incredible to watch.
Well, and it's very, it's important to realize the components we talked about with PBIS, right? Part of it is the positive acknowledgement. Part of it is the data tracking. Kickboard is this beautiful vehicle by which to do those things, right? And part of the training, as Andrew mentioned, has been making sure when you're awarding a student a point, you're discussing why. And in Kickboard, you have to add the why, right? And we're able to track that. So when we think about those key data indicators that we are able to explore, we haven't been able to do this before this year because we just didn't have the means to do it. We didn't have the software to do it. So there are five data points right here that Kickboard is going to afford us. We don't have some of these from past years because, again, we just didn't have the software. But going into next year, we'll be able to track the referrals, the suspensions, interventions, which is what teachers are doing in the moment to respond to behaviors, whether that's student takes a break, teacher makes a parent phone call, we'll have access to that data, as well as tracking positive behaviors and non-referred negative behaviors. These are the behaviors that do not necessarily necessitate a office discipline referral, but we can track them and we can intervene before they get to that point, which is incredibly exciting. My building has utilized those behaviors twice now to actually set goals, which is, again, part of that PBIS work, right? Using your data to action plan. So we've been able to set goals around reducing or increasing, I should say, opportunities and acknowledgments for following directions and communicating respectfully. And that was rooted in our Kickboard data. So it'll be great work looking ahead to next year.
So I'm going to try and skate through the next 7 minutes here. So the last big thing was our community of kindness initiatives. When we're building this entire community, we wanted to think outside the bounds of our district, think outside the walls of our schools. So students are steeped in empathy and kindness no matter where they go. When they leave school, they get off the bus, they're going out to dinner or they're seeing whatever, these kindness initiatives follow them. That this is where they live in this kindness. In a world where so many people are throwing bricks on each other, on others, be the one who builds bridges with them. And the work with our Student Board of Delegates and the work with our initiatives has been incredible in watching kids build bridges for themselves, which has been really, really, really fun to watch.
So as we looked at planning this, these kindness initiatives and this work, we took a look at three kind of key ideas: raising awareness, opportunities for action — you can't just raise awareness and not back it up with action — and community involvement. So we're gonna go through those quickly here. So raising awareness, obviously that started early in the year when we tried to bring local businesses on board with just simple marquee messaging, things of that sort, social media posts, all of those pieces. We won't obviously go through these individually, but they're beautiful. They're beautiful. And I will tell you, one of the most moving things as we've done this work is when we have reached out to the businesses, the level of enthusiasm and support has been unprecedented. The opportunity that I've had and Andrew's had is to have heartfelt conversations with these people that provide services and goods in our community has been nothing short of amazing. And it's been really, it's been such a great indicator, because people are hungry for it. People are hungry for it. They want to see kindness. So opportunities for action.
So then we think about watching our students engage in this action, engage in this work. The Great Kindness Challenge happened the week of, it happened Count Week, which was a really cool way to make that fall. And it happened with Valentine's Day. The Great Kindness Challenge is a national kindness initiative. It was founded by a high school student in California, and it gives students in schools specific opportunities to practice kindness, to chart their kindness, and to engage in different activities every day for them to work through this and to show the importance of empathy and kindness. And we saw so many great activities. So many schools ran with the district-wide initiatives, and they came up with their own, which were fantastic. So we're going to move through some of the pictures super quick. The high school and the middle school did a great job working through making kindness chains and making friendship bracelets, giving high fives to each other, like their paper notes for high fives, and it was really, really cool to watch that. Another action point came with our Spirit Week for the Walk, as we did a sock donation drive. This idea of walking a mile in your shoes, you need socks to do that. We challenged schools to donate socks and to collect those. Raisinville donated 459 pairs, which they're our winner. But we collected over 1,000 pairs of socks, which we're going to donate to local homeless shelters. And we're really excited to show students that that kindness stays in our community, specifically because we have, you know, approximately 260 odd students that are identified under McKinney-Vento. So being able to work and hand this kindness specifically to students that are in need in our own area is incredibly important. And students really, really had a good time with this, which is great.
And those items will be donated to the Salvation Army. Did you say that?
No, you're good.
Sorry. We spoke with them actually today. They were very, very excited. So.
Yep.
So the next piece was community involvement, and that's where our empathy walk came in, and it really was a community event. It was a 2-mile trek through the city of Monroe, concluded with dinner and music and gift bags. We had 13 prompts that were placed throughout the route, and we had group leaders that walked folks through those prompts and those conversations. We started at the South, we ended at Navarre Field. That took place on Thursday, the 2nd of May. It was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful. We did. We were able to survey some of those participants and some of those volunteers, and the feedback. We'll share some of it with you, but the anecdotal feedback was just beautiful. So we had, 100% of volunteer respondents that agreed strongly or agreed that the walk succeeded in raising awareness around empathy in our community, which is huge. That was the goal, you know. We had 100% say that they would return next year. 75% agreed or strongly agreed that the prompts along the route really got them thinking about empathy in their own lives. 75.8 agreed or strongly agreed that their group leaders facilitated strong conversation. And 93% said that they really enjoyed the event at Navarre Field. So there's some really positive work around that.
Yeah, 1 minute, and I'd love to go through all of the, like, all the anecdotal data, or please take a look at some of these comments. There are, some of them were incredible about the specific conversations they had with their grandchildren or their children, or the engagement that they had with the community, and it's like when we think about people being hungry for this, if you read the comments, you can tell just how much people appreciate the opportunity to work through just a public display of kindness and empathy. And it was really, really, really neat to watch.
It really did. So we just want to leave you, an update. Andrew and I have applied to present our rubrics and the work we've done around kindness and how those two can support each other at the National PBIS Leadership Forum. We haven't heard back yet, but we're looking forward to hopefully representing the district in that capacity. But we want to leave you with a thought. In September, Mr. Shaw rolled out the year with the power of one. And we had these beautiful keychains, and there was a story that went with it around starfish and things of that sort. And we just wanted to bring it back together by reflecting on, by focusing on the power of just one, being able to affect one family, one student, just one. What really ended up happening within the work just that we've done, and that's not even, you know, the work in other units throughout the district. 400 people, over 400 people participated in the kindness walk. 22 businesses supported the walk, made donations, 14 shared messaging. We had K-12 students that participated again in a national kindness challenge. Over 1,000 socks donated to a local shelter. 319,000 times students demonstrated being respectful, responsible, and safe. I think the quote at the end sums it up. There is no power for change greater than a community discovering what it cares about. So, yeah, well, power of one is fearless and formidable, but the power of many working together is better. And there is not one thing that he and I did this year that we did on our own. So we want to be transparent around that. We had incredible support, and our district is just
incredible.
In a beautiful direction. So
thank you so much for your time. And if you have any thoughts or questions that don't leak over into the actual meeting time, we'd be more than happy to answer whatever you need.
Thank you for your presentation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I love the data on suspensions and expulsions. And it is, definitely is telling by the way fewer times that we've had to meet together this spring to discuss that kind of discipline.
If you guys have the opportunity, I would really encourage you to read the comments that folks made. It'll be some of the best reading you've had in a while.
And we're super excited to be able to pull data from Kickboard next year and come back here with more specifics and nerd out on it. So I'll be really excited.
Thank you.
Thank
so
you.
Before you go, a huge thank you. I'm sitting up here, and I know I'm losing the way I can talk, but the emotions are starting to roll. And I started to look back, and I did the math going, so in the 22-23 school year, we had approximately 7 days of suspension on average per student in our district, and this year we had 4 days on average. I think in terms of that power of that one, that power of just the collectivism, the conversations, still great work we can always do every single day, but I'm thrilled for what we see, the work that's been happening here, just extremely, extremely appreciative, and really appreciative of when we go into the community and we see our signs up, we go, and I'm talking about even just the ones of the kindness walk, that when you walk into different businesses and hearing what business owners or others are saying out there and taking part. So thank you for your courageousness to go out and to do this work for us, and the consistency. I think that's probably the biggest thing is what these two help provide is consistency amongst across the district, and coupled with our student board of delegates, and we're seeing beautiful, beautiful results. So thank you.
One thing real quick,
sure.
We're talking about data, I went and where do you get your data numbers from for the suspension and expulsions? Are they the same that go to the state?
So we have pulled, Stella has pulled those for us, and those are done by period. And so that is the count that you saw today.
Okay. Yeah, because I went on today and looked at the state numbers.
Okay.
And that's why I was, the numbers don't quite, they don't quite correlate with the data that you know, that's why I was wondering where you're getting yours from, because, yeah. So that was, obviously we don't have this year's in there, so that's why,
Well, that's going to be the nice thing about Kickboard, is Kickboard's going to help us solidify those numbers and to make sure that when we pull those things, that everything's consistent. So that's going to be really helpful with that.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
There you go. That's it.
All right, can I get a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All right, show of hands. This meeting is adjourned. We will start our regular board meeting at 7 p.m.